Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast. I'm Tom, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Check out all of our podcasts. Local folks doing local podcasts. What's going on? Monday, back to the grind. Oh, man. Mondays are my favorite days. I think I've said that. It is a, I don't know, man. More tension, more stress, more arguments, more fights, more confusion happens for me on the weekend than it does at all during the week. And, you know, this weekend was no different. I think it's just because we're all forced to kind of hang out all day with each other. And, you know, we live in a pretty small house. I mean, some people would say it was big. I mean, it's not big. I mean, compared to the little apartment I used to live in, it's big. But it compared to the regular houses, it's just a regular house. It's an appropriate house for where we are in our life. But it doesn't have these places that we can go escape to and, you know, avoid others. We're all kind of forced to kind of, you know, be in it. And if it's stress or, you know, bickering, we're all in it. And there was a little bit of that yesterday. And, you know, whatever. I don't feel like pointing out people's problems, my problems. You know I have challenges. I'm sensitive. Get my feathers all ruffled pretty easily. Justified resentments, right? I remember, you know, I was watching something and this, I don't know what the person said, but they're like, I resent that. And, you know, it went in one ear and out the other. But I was thinking, oh, I guess there is a time, or whether it's the person or the situation, or maybe if it's just that obvious. But some people will say, listen, man, I resent that. Where I go, no problem. And then I pack that little resentment up in my pocket.
In the wooden chair beside my window, I wear a face born in the falling rain. Talk to shadows from a lonely candle, recite the phrases from the wall I can't explain. This holy pain.
I think the, I don't know, maybe back in the day, I always picture these as like, you know, things they would do back in the day, in the old days. I resent that. That bothers me. And then it kind of transitioned to this, I resemble that. I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe I need to say that more, right? I resent that. Because if I don't say it, then I'm going to pack it away as a resentment. I guess if you identify it or throw it out there, put some light on it, handle it or deal with it at that moment, is probably better than saying, okay, no problem, and then just packing it away, which is what I do. All my problems are problems that I've created. Whether I didn't say I was annoyed, or whether I didn't, Yeah, I guess just that, you know, because I didn't say that I resented it. It became a secret. And now I'm carrying around this secret like, that fucking person really annoyed me with that. And I can remember myself. I do that all the time. You know, you're like, hey, you know, someone, you have a conversation with someone and, you know, they say something and, you know, it's annoying or you resent it, but you don't say anything. And then you get back in the car and you're like, hey, that fucking guy's an asshole, or that girl's a real bitch, or, you know, I was really an asshole or something. But I've kept it with me. And I don't know if it's because I'm afraid, insecure, avoiding conflict. I don't know what it is. Maybe I just don't want to seem like I'm such a pain in the ass. Can you imagine saying, I resent that every time you get bothered? I resent that. Someone cut you off. I resent that. You know, this morning I took the kids to school. And you know, we go back and forth, my wife and I do it. And I'm, you know, if anybody knows me, I'm early. I'm always early. Early's on time. On time is late. So, you know, the kids and I, we usually leave the house at like 10 till 8. If things are going smoothly, I may stop and get a coffee. But usually we get to the, you know, and I don't know, if you have kids and if you take them to school or what the system is that they have in place there. But at this school, we pull up to the front door. You know, this is our first year. We had a new school built. So, but same thing. You pull up, you know, it's a big, huge, rounded, wraparound kind of area to pull up and, you know, your kids jump out and then you pull off. And usually we get there 8 o'clock. You know, the kids go into the school at 8:30, so we're literally 30 minutes early. And, you know, if it's nice, you know, Sam and I will get out and Teresa will get out and we'll throw the football or we'll kick the soccer ball or we'll do something outside. You know, if it's kind of crummy, we just sit in the car and chat. But this morning I'm not in a big hurry. I'm doing a podcast at 10. I'm not working. Today's just a day of kind of being around, not around my damn family. And so, you know, we're running a little bit behind. And we get there, and we're probably the 10th car. And 8:30 comes along, and the first person that's in line, the kids aren't getting out. They're not getting out of the car. It's 8:30. My kids are like, it's 8:30. What's going on? And the person behind them isn't really seem to be too concerned. Nobody seems to be too concerned. Well, I resent that. That's what I should have said. Hey, I resent that. But now I'm like, this is annoying. And it starts to kind of annoy me. It's 8:32. I have nowhere to be. Nowhere. I have to be here at 10. That's an hour and a half. I work 15, 20 minutes from the school. That gives me an hour and 10 minutes to spare. But I'm annoyed. And what shows up when the annoyance shows up? Arrogance. And I'm thinking, you know, listen, I mean, I've been here before. I am familiar with arrogance. I've talked about it. It happens. When things start becoming inconvenient for me, arrogance shows up and I start doing things not quite within the rules. Now, there's no rules posted for how this works, right? And the other funny thing is that where you park, you kind of pull up to the sidewalk and you park right before a crosswalk. So, you know, there's a big parking lot in front of the school. Everybody that parks, the teachers and stuff, they walk down the center of the parking lot and they cross this drive-through area on a crosswalk. So traditionally, the first car usually parks right up to the crosswalk. But when I get there in the morning, I go past the crosswalk, and I'm really the first car just past the crosswalk. so that more cars can pull up. Because usually what happens is where I'm parked, then there's a huge 100-foot space in front of me, and then 50 cars parked behind me. So I just try to pull up a little farther just to... But it's 8:35 now, or now it's probably 8:33. I resent that. I should have been yelling that out the window, but no. Arrogance had shown. And my kids got on board the arrogance train. They're like, go around this person, pull up there. I was like, okay. So I pull out of line. I go around 6 cars. I pull up to the sidewalk. My kids jump out. They go up to the door. And I drive off. Ooh. Now, I didn't do it in such a way that drew attention. You know, I didn't squeal the wheels. I was just like, you know, I got to go. I didn't have to go anywhere. It's magic. I'm going to blame it on magic. Something magical happens. And, yeah. But I don't really particularly feel bad about it this morning because, honestly, you know, there's this kind of gray area. You know, we drop the kids off at 8:30. Everybody knows this. We pull up. I think it's the responsibility of the person in the first car, right? And maybe these people didn't understand. It was raining a little bit. Maybe they were expecting a teacher to come over to the car and, you know, help them open the door, whatever. Maybe they just didn't understand the process. But I, you know, the gray period showed up. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I mean, can we sit here? Do I need to, you know, I need to get on with my day. I know I have an hour and a half, but I still, you know, because if arrogance doesn't get his way, Grumpy Tom shows up. And that's sick too. So how could this perfectly great Monday morning, not a problem in the world, life's going my way, turn into one of these moments this morning where it really cracks up my foundation a bit? And the worst part is I'm completely aware of this whole process. Completely aware. I thought, well, I think we're past arrogant. I think now we're just clearly smart to pull out a line and go around, right? Because maybe there's a problem. Maybe somebody's broken down. Do you do that? Do you create a bunch of reasons? Maybe the car's broken down. Maybe there's something wrong. I should go around. That never works out well for me either. But this has nothing to do with drinking alcohol. This has nothing to do with doing drugs. This is just me. The funny part is that, you know, I was running late. I actually wasn't running late. I was taking it easy this morning. I wasn't in a big hurry. I was like, nothing's going to bother me this morning. I'm not going to. Because there is this, like I said, this, you know, the first car pulls up right next to the crosswalk, and it leaves this huge gap, right? And then there's another kind of a drop-off area farther around the turn where I think the younger kids may get out. So one of the things that happens is, like, we get there a half hour early, right? And we're parked in the first spot, and there'll be 50 cars behind us, and I'll watch these cars come along and pass all the cars and then pull into the spot in front of the crosswalk. And I think, oh, they're special. I resent that. These people are special. I can't believe they would drive past all those cars and pull all the way up to this first spot. Special. It's kind of what I did this morning. Hey man, I'm not perfect. I'm a human, doing human things, doing the best I can. But I just called myself out. I'll try to do better next time. You know, the, you know, it's kind of, I don't know. It's just kind of the way it is right now. Let's see. Let's see if we can do some reading. Maybe we can get a better understanding of what my problem is. Maybe today's reading will explain what a dumbass I am. Let's see. December the 14th, reaching out. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they worked with you. I like that. I like that. I'll read that again. Here we go. Never talk down to an alcoholic from a moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they worked with you. When I come into contact with a newcomer, do I have a tendency to look at him from my perceived angle of success in AA? Do I compare him with a large number of acquaintances I have made in the fellowship? Do I point out to him in a Do I point out to him in a magisterial way that, oh my God, I butchered this one. Oh fuck. All right, let me try this again. Let me read this over. It's Monday. All right, here we go. When I come into contact with a newcomer, do I have a tendency to look at him from a perceived angle of success in AA? Do I compare him with the large number of acquaintances I have made in the fellowship? Do I point out to him in a magistrate way the voice of AA? What is my real attitude toward him? I must examine myself whenever I meet a newcomer to make sure that I am carrying the message with simplicity, humility, and generosity. The one who still suffers from this terrible disease of alcoholism must find in me a friend who will allow him to get to know the AA way, because I had such a friend when I arrived in AA. Today is my turn to hold out my hand with love to my sister or brother alcoholic and to show him or her the way to happiness. Yeah, I love that. Ron M. Ron M. was my guy. Ron M. came up to me. I'm going to be your temporary sponsor. I just shared about this. I won't get too much into it, but it was just, have you ever been so beaten down, so broken up, that you're just willing to take any suggestion? You're just open for all ideas. That's how I was when I walked in. I went from my normal life, drinking every day, working, drinking every day, working, to 100 stitches, not 100, maybe 20. 20 stitches, staying up at BB. You know, when I was brought in, I met Dr. Angel, and then I, you know, the lady called or gave me a number. I called, I went back, had the interview, was, you know, admitted. And I was at, you know, I went from where I was to all of a sudden living in a hospital. Ron M. came up there. Listen, you want to go to a meeting? Doing exactly what a fellow brother alcoholic should do. I'm going to be your temporary sponsor. For a guy like me, anybody that's out there struggling has to know what I'm talking about. And if you are struggling or were struggling and are in an alcoholic, we know what the bottom's like. I mean, maybe we don't share all of our dirty secrets out there with every person that we know, but we inside know what a fucking crummy, bumpy path it's been. And to be beaten up and beaten down and just complete humiliation, ego devastation, all of a sudden you become willing, and Ron M. said, I'm going to be your temporary sponsor. And I said, okay. Thank God for Ron M. I probably, well, I would have stayed. I probably would have stayed. I probably would have been okay. But who knows? Ron M. I'm going to be your temporary sponsor. Those words were like, oh my God, yes, thank you. I think maybe I heard, I'm going to fix you. I'm going to make this all better. I'm going to make all this pain go away. But there was a word in there, temporary. Another way of AA saying, you know, listen, let's try this. Nothing official. We're not married. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Follow our path and you won't fail. But Ron M., man, he was like, I'll pick you up tomorrow. I mean, he was just over the top. I'll pick you up tomorrow. We'll, you know, go to a meeting. We'll have a meeting before the meeting. You know, just all this stuff. And then, you know, it wasn't long where I was making the coffee. Part of feeling included. That's huge. If you're struggling and you really want to get sober, I don't know if the Ron M. situation will happen for you, but, you know, reach out. Say hello. Announce it. I need a sponsor. Or you know what, even better? Say, I need a temporary sponsor. Temporary. You need a meeting buddy. Don't worry about the steps. Don't worry about shit. You need someone to be accountable for or to when it comes to going to meetings. Your job in the first year is just to get to meetings, right? Go to a meeting. Go to two a day. They say do a 90 and 90. I did like 110 and 90. I mean, I ate that shit up. I mean, there's been periods in my recovery where I had, you know, 6-7 years into recovery, you know, you're really kind of, I had a rhythm. I would, you know, I would try to take a commitment for 3 months out of the year. I could have done more probably, but I tried to always keep 3 month commitments going on. You know, you also don't want to be around too much, right? I mean, you want to be around, but you don't need to be the guy at the front of the room everywhere. So I would try to take on, you know, a home group. That's get a home group. Find a meeting you like, join it, become part of the home group, put your sobriety date down, become accountable to the group, make coffee, be a greeter, you know, do the readings, pass the basket, whatever it is you got to do to be part of that group, do it. And find a temporary sponsor. Find a temporary person to go to fucking a lot of meetings with. You know, if you're a man, find a bunch of men. If you're a woman, find a bunch of great women. They don't mix, though. It doesn't work out. Maybe you have a new recipe for this success of this man-woman sponsorship bullshit, but it ain't going to work out. So don't even do it. Find yourself. If you're a gentleman, find another gentleman and ask him to be your temporary sponsor. But make sure they go to a lot of meetings. You know, a temporary sponsor is really a meeting friend. Hey, you want to go to a meeting? Yeah, I'll go. Two people really ain't got a lot going on, working on sobriety, teaming up together. Hey, I got to make the coffee. You want to come help me? Sure, I'll come. Hey, I got to speak this month. Can I count on you to maybe, you know, speak one of the days of the month for me? I'll do it. Help each other. Temporary sponsor. Get yourself a little bit, get yourself settled in a bit. Acquainted with the process. But not too much. I'm telling you. If you take on a cookie commitment, keep it fucking simple. Just some basic cookies and some coffee. So don't try to fix your whole past and life and your recreate your whole world through the cookie. Here's your cookies. They don't have to be variety. Oreos usually work. Or chocolate chip. I've gone to so many meetings. I walk over to the table. I get a little cup, a little coffee. I grab a couple cookies and I go sit down. I sit down. I'm like, ah, that's a fucking terrible cookie. But I'm just eating. It's something to do. A lot of the times you'll find and you'll hear from the past, you know, when someone would go like, you know, do a 12-step call on people, they used to say, bring candy because alcoholics really crave sugar. So maybe the cookie is just a little sugar. You know, if you're agitated or if you're just holding on, wanting to, you know, run out of the room and go get drunk, have a cookie. It's something to do. And just, you know, raise one another up, support one another. I had a whole group of men when I first got sober that I used to hang out with. All doing the same thing, trying to stay sober. We had a men's breakfast. We used to take meetings into the jail, meetings into the rehabs. We'd ride together. And if I was going to, and you know, the face has changed. There was my buddy Tim, my buddy Scott, my buddy Paul, my buddy Rick. There's a few more in there sprinkled in. Probably six or seven guys. And I'd probably say today, that was in 1997. I'd say today, those six guys are all sober today. You know, if you build a life, a relationship, a family, so to speak, in this program, and if you, you know, listen, it happens. If something happens, if you go back out or you have a stumble or you do something or a court date shows up or something happens and you are, whether you go to jail or you pick up or whatever, you're more likely to come back if there's a group of people that are like, man, we get it. We understand. That shit happens. Then if you're just out there on your own, by yourself, keeping all of your resentments and all of your judgments and all of your arrogance to yourself. You know, some of the biggest things I've changed in my life came from being in a relationship with a friend in a meeting. If it wasn't for that, I would not be sober today, I don't think. Or I don't know. I really wanted to get sober. I was over it. Fucking train flying 100 miles an hour. I'm just like, I wish I could just get off this bitch. And one day it abruptly stopped. It stopped so hard I needed stitches. But it stopped. And I got off. And unfortunately, I've gotten on a couple times, but I'm off. And hopefully, December the 22nd, I'm going to celebrate 11 years. I think it's 11. This is so funny. I announced it was 12, but then I told my wife I'm celebrating 12 years, and she says, is it 12? I thought it was 11. And then I thought, I really struggled with trying to figure out if it was 10 last year. And then I remember I ran into somebody from the meeting, a group, you know, this guy Tom that I've known for years was part of my first home group. And he says, you got 10 years this year. Congratulations. And I was like, thank you. That just confirms I have 10 years. So this year I will have 11. But that ego is like, I think it might be 12. But it's 11. Who cares? I'm sober, and I'm grateful.